Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words with AFI's bass player slash coffee connoisseur, Hunter Bergen. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Right now, it's going to be the holidays, and today is the first day recording since Thanksgiving. I hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving. I was in New York with my wife and our wacky family, and my family was basically begging us at gunpoint to come back every single year. So that was fun. In the world of Waldman Management, the new Candy Hearts tunes are stellar. I just got a final copy of them the other day, sending them out to some people, hopefully generating some buzz. Same thing with Film Speed, who's in the process of, like I said the other week, a minor negotiation. Mirai's just announced their first ever tour with Brigades and In Her Own Words, who's a fellow act on In Vogue Records. We're really excited about that. And the In Vogue holiday compilation is up and proceeds go to an incredible cause. So listen to their Charlie Brown song. And Zach James and his group Boomtown Crooks are in the process of packaging their first full-length release. And coincidentally, or not so coincidentally, Hunter actually worked on a song with Zach. And it's pretty cool what's going on right now. So in the next few weeks on Waldman's Words, we've got... You're going to laugh at this if you have a sense of humor, but the hardcore band Ass Life. We've got some really, really funny people from that group on the show coming on. So Andy Hill, hilarious, hilarious guy. I don't know what we're going to talk about because he is quite the improv character with IO. So we're going to actually delve into that world as well because we're trying to educate on entertainment here. And we also have Kevin Miller from the band Mirror Eyes on as well, doing a phone interview from the great state of Kentucky. For this broadcast, I wore my special Hanukkah socks, and I want to let you know that 8 Crazy Nights with Hunter Bergen, it can't be beat. Drinking coffee, light menorahs, recording shows with Dan. I want to give Dan a special shout out for being my Golden State Warrior. You're a trooper. He's actually smiling. Remember, I told this to Hunter just before we started that if Dan smiles, it's going to be a good show. And 2 minutes, 32 seconds in, he's smiling from ear to ear. Look at that face. And he laughed. So that means it's going to be an incredible, incredible show. So for the next 45 minutes or so, sit down, have a cup of almond milk cappuccino, and listen to Waldman's Words brought to you by the illustrious Adobe. To all you for listening, thank you so much. You keep me in business and you keep my Bel Air estate green. Talk soon. Welcome back to Waldman's Words featuring Hunter Bergen from AFI. What up, dude?
What's up, man?
Thank you so much for coming out, making the trek to NoHo.
I know. It's so far from where I stayed last night, which is in NoHo.
Oh, wow. I was going to say you stayed in Ho, but you decided.
I camped out just in anticipation. You know, I didn't want to be late, so.
He wasn't late. He actually called me at 10:31, assuming that he started dialing at 10:30, so.
I did.
I'm proud of you. Thank you for making this trip. So we start every single broadcast in a quite narcissistic fashion. How did we meet?
How did we meet? On?
I'll show you the script.
Let's see. How we met. DJ Rawstar's show. That's how we met.
Wow.
For all the people listening that know the show, they probably already know that.
He used to actually be an Adobe show, so it's going full rectangle right now.
Okay.
So we met. Ross was a buddy of both of ours at the time, and Hunter was, I believe, a guest host.
Yes.
And I was in a band at the time called Lido Beach, and Hunter and I hung out a few times, and now he's on my show, so stay in school.
You just wait. 5 years from now, you're going to be on my show.
Dude, I am totally down, and I will actually keep it completely PG the entire time, and I will ask for a coffee the exact way that you did.
Okay.
I appreciate
it. Complete rectangle.
Yeah, that's what I said. It's great. We're going complete rectangle. So we're in LA now. You stayed in the NoHo, but you used to live in the EBA. Talk about the East Bay.
East Bay. Okay. Well... The East Bay, for those of you who don't know, is the eastern part of the San Francisco Bay Area. So I lived in Berkeley, and I also lived in Oakland. And this was a long time ago, so I don't remember a lot about it. But
well, when did you move to LA?
I moved to LA in 2005.
Oh, okay.
So, but I was in the Bay Area. So right after I joined AFI, a little after I joined AFI, I moved into a house with all the guys. We all lived in a house in Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
And it was convenient. You know, we would carpool to rehearsal and things like that. But then after a while, it was a little too, I don't know. It was kind of weird living close to the Berkeley campus. A lot of students there and not a lot of punks. And so,
yeah, I don't think UC Berkeley is a very punk rock school. I think it's the number one public school in the United States.
Okay. Not the number one punk school, though.
No, that is UC Fresno.
Okay.
I don't even know if that's a school. But
probably, I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't ask me about schools. But yeah, so eventually I moved to Oakland and then moved down here. But the East Bay, it was great growing up. I grew up in Grass Valley, which is like 2.5 hours north of there.
Mm-hmm.
And
do your folks still live in the same place?
They do. Still live in the same house I grew up in.
That's amazing.
But so I would drive to shows. I'd go to see shows in the East Bay and, you know, at Gilman Street and San Francisco. And
924, right?
Yeah, and so that kind of became the sort of, I don't know, the end-all be-all for shows for me. Like, I would drive down to see shows at Gilman, not even knowing who was playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, $5 for a show. And so after moving there, that was, like, still remained one of my favorite places to see shows.
Would you say that that's the, I guess, the analogous CBGB, Gilman Street? Would you say that it's... for the West Coast, what CBGB was for New York in the 70s?
I mean...
or Coney Island High?
It's a little different, but I could see definitely like on the... definitely in terms of the community and sort of on an emotional level. That's, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people feel the same about that. So, of course, it's still there.
It is. I drove by the other day.
Still has shows. So, yeah, so, but that was, you know, there was a pretty strong scene in the Bay Area and a lot of great bands from the East Bay that, I don't know, it was great being part of a scene in those days
mm-hmm.
when you play a lot of small shows.
I feel that there's not much of a scene right now.
I don't even know.
Yeah, we're not really, we're old.
Yeah.
We're not in the know. I asked, because I kind of gave Hunter an outline of what the show is. Obviously, we deviate, but I said... at the end, we usually close with advice, and he's like, I can give you great advice on how to be a band in the 90s. And I said, perfect. So we'll get into that in a bit. East Bay life. Bands like Operation Ivy, like Green Day. Wasn't Crimpshine?
Crimpshine. Yeah, a lot of those bands were... they had broken up just around the time that I started going to shows, so I didn't see Operation Ivy. I didn't get to see Crimpshine, but you know, I got to see early Rancid shows.
When they were three-piece, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty sweet.
And, you know, Green Day shows were always great and still are. Still.
Did you ever see them when they were Sweet Children? Or?
No. That's see, all this was just before my time. And, of course, only a couple years before my time. And I always lamented if I had just been born a couple years earlier, I could have seen all these great bands. But, you know.
As soon as I left Long Island to go to college, Long Island got cool. With Glassjaw did well, Movie Life did well, Taking Back Sunday, Brand New. So I always say, if I was born just a tad later, I would have been a part of it. So together, we could have been an old young man.
Yeah, an old young man.
Yep. That's another good band name. So you grew up north of here. You lived there for a bit. Were you in bands in the East Bay area? Did you ever get to play Gilman?
Yeah, so the first time I played Gilman was with a band in high school, was with a band called Inner Frog that I played drums for.
Oh, wow.
And so that was in 93, I think. And then with my band Blowhole, which my sister was in.
Which is kind of like a frog. So Inner Frog, Blowhole, you had this frog motif for a while.
I don't frog? Well, I'm thinking more of a whale.
Oh,
don't get it confused.
I screw up mammals.
We'll send you to like an animal biology class next.
Dan teaches one.
Okay.
He laughed.
let's see. And then I was in a band called The Force that played Gilman.
What'd you play in that one?
I play bass.
Okay. Is bass your first instrument or was drums?
No, guitar. Well, okay. I don't know. Let me think about this.
You have a lot of time.
I play piano.
Okay.
Clarinet.
Nice.
Saxophone. Guitar. Drums. Bass was kind of like, okay, I guess I could play bass in that.
And you still say it that way.
Yeah.
So you're your own band featuring clarinet and sax.
Basically.
That's awesome. Basically.
Basically. So, okay, let me think. How did this... AFI played Gilman quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2000, I started a band called...
Was it this one?
I called The Frisk.
Oh.
And... I played drums in that band, and that featured former members of The Criminals,
mm-hmm.
and we played Gilman a lot.
Okay.
And
Criminals get frisked.
Yeah.
I'm not wrong about this one. The whale one I'll give to you.
Okay.
Okay, all right, thank all right. you.
You get it.
Thank you.
Over the years, played there quite a few times in quite a few bands.
I've always wanted to see a show there. I was on a business trip.
As the management thing.
Going up to like San Jose and NorCal, and I made it a point to just walk by Gilman, and that street is so iconic. It's so cool. And I saw a bunch of hardware stores. It was great.
Yeah, that's the best part is hardware stores.
Yep. They had a public restroom. It was awesome.
Oh.
Yep.
Okay. So, yeah. So, there you go. East Bay Life.
East Bay Life. Frisk. All right, we're gonna leave that section of it. So Hunter Revenge, what about that?
Hunter Revenge. So that was I started that in 1999, and it was just me kind of messing around with the idea of fully producing my own songs, writing and performing and producing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more just a challenge for me to see if I could write songs in a style, like a specific style. And often people think that I was just trying to do and like emulate Prince, like early Prince's style.
In 1999?
Yeah, exactly. but it wasn't just that. It was, there's a lot of music from that sort of era that I really liked. So, you know, influences also included Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson's totally a poor man's Prince.
Like Kool and the Gang.
Oh,
Earth, Wind, and Fire. You know, there's a lot of stuff that
respect
were influences, and but it was never meant to be like a band. It was just me like seeing what I could do. Can I record songs mm-hmm. in that style? And you know, I did my best. The recording technology that I had was very, very primitive.
This is pre GarageBand and pre Pro Tools.
This is pre computers.
Oh.
This is me recording onto like a reel to reel four track. Machine.
Wow.
So, you know, the recordings I did were not that great. And then I just sort of let it go. And then a couple of years later, this guy convinced me to play a show. And so I thought, well, I'll give it a shot. And I actually did quite a few shows and sort of evolved that, but didn't really...
What'd you play live? What instrument?
I played guitar.
Okay.
And the first show was like a drum machine and me on guitar.
Like Adam and his package?
Yeah, basically. So I don't know. It's one of these things where I never meant to dive into it like all the way, and then sort of reluctantly got dragged into it a couple of different times, and then wanted to work more on the recording. And I've recorded quite a few songs that I never released. I just feel like it was never quote, like a complete expression of my my artistic side.
Mm-hmm.
It was just one tiny little slice of my thing.
Well, it's a creative outlet.
Yeah. It was just one very specific creative outlet. And I started to feel like that was, people were, outside of AFI, that's what people wanted to associate me with. And I just didn't want to be...
Dance blown up, dude.
I didn't want to be exclusively associated with that. So I kind of just got away from that project in 2009.
Oh, wow.
So that's where that
So you sits. Had it for 10 years?
Yeah.
On and off, right?
Yeah.
That's so. Very sweet. Decade of Decadence.
Ooh.
That's the Motley Crue Greatest yeah. Hits album.
Wow.
Sorry.
So, yeah. Transition. Next subject.
Well, next up. Well, you've been kind of... you unintentionally talked about numbers 4 and number 6 on my sheet. So AFI
How did you get into that group? Because I know that they existed on a really uber small indie before they went to Nitro. So
yeah,
I found this out on our coffee walk.
Yeah, coffee walk. You learn a lot, really.
Yep, if you're listening, and not, and there's transitions.
Okay, so AFI. I was playing in the band The Force that I previously mentioned, and our singer Matt Wedgley was also AFI's merch guy. He would go on tour with AFI, and we would sit around and wait for him to come back so we could play shows. And we all became friends, and we would play some shows together, and we even did a tour together. Mm-hmm. And at the point that their bass player, Jeff, decided to leave the band.
For what reason?
Just personal reasons.
Okay.
He mentioned a couple people that he thought could at least temporarily fill his shoes. And I was one of those people. And I was asked to do a tour.
And the tour was your audition?
And the tour, well, no, I mean, basically, like, I had to, okay, yeah, I guess I can, I guess in a month I can learn all these songs and go on tour. And the tour was a pretty big tour. And so that led to about 6 months or so of me sort of just being the temporary guy, like just filling in. And then I was asked to be an actual member. And that was like 19 years ago.
Wow. So you're approaching 2 decades of decadence.
Yeah.
Oh my nice. God. It's okay. I date myself here all the time because a lot of the people in the Adobe office, with the exception of Tom, are in fourth grade. So I actually am old enough to probably have a fourth grader.
Man, fourth grade.
Yeah, tales of a fourth grade nothing. Those are such great days. Yeah, you like that Judy Blume reference?
That was nice.
Thank you.
It's like the type of thing you might read in fourth grade.
Heyo. Or Super Fudge.
Yeah.
Beverly Cleary and Roald Dahl are my people.
Fourth grade, I read all of the Narnia books.
The Chronicles of Narnia.
And what else did I read? Like A Wrinkle in Time?
Okay.
I thought that was a
Phantom Tollbooth?
I never read that.
I was a Roald Dahl kid. I loved his books. And surprisingly dark, Roald Dahl stuff. Matilda, I think, is still my favorite book. And I should read that again.
What about Danny, Champion of the World?
Oh, my, come on.
BFG?
BFG, The Witches, James and the Giant Peach.
Of course.
Are we doing a Dahl off? This is awesome. We're going to one-up each other with our Roald Dahl
that's
knowledge.
It. We've already... That's all I know.
I actually... Trivia question. What was the name of the sequel to Willy Wonka? See if you remember this.
It was The Great Glass Elevator.
High five. Hunter knows his preteen lit better than most people would think he would. I mean, when he drove here, I noticed he was driving in a giant peach.
Yes.
So this is pretty sweet.
It was hard to park.
It's very hard to park, but I told you just park perpendicular to the Big Apple. All right. We digress. So AFI... And then at the time when you joined AFI, did you have other sources of income, side jobs, or were they pretty like touring like 9-10 months out of the year at that point?
Funny you should ask.
Whoa.
Not really. yes, I worked at a movie theater.
Okay.
I worked at...
In the East Bay?
I worked at the Del Oro Theater in Grass Valley, California.
Okay.
And it was tough. At first, I had to try to balance a touring schedule and a work schedule. And so most of the time, I would just take these huge chunks of time off of work. And my manager was very understanding.
You're very lucky.
Yeah. But within, I guess, 7 months or so, I just quit. The time that I would be home from tour... I didn't want to work.
No, of course not.
And nobody wanted to put me on the schedule, and so it was fine. Because the first couple tours, I made a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of money, but it was enough for me to live.
Right.
And I was at my parents' house. I was living at my parents' house still.
So you didn't have major overhead or anything like that.
And this is before I had a cell phone. I think the only thing I...
You really just dated yourself. I love it.
I know. I had to pay for insurance.
Did you have a beeper?
I did. I had a pager. I had a pager bill and insurance. And
he used to page me 911 all the time.
Just for fun.
Yeah.
And what, food?
Food.
So, yeah, I didn't have any expenses, really. It was great. I wish that was now.
I would love that. If I could find a way to not have expenses, that'd be awesome. Gas is so expensive. Anyway, we digress more. So when did AFI become a full-fledged career, though?
Well, okay, because I didn't have any expenses, and because I didn't mention this, but I'm going to just say it now, because I quit school to do that first tour.
What school?
I was taking classes at, like, a local college. It became my career, but I wasn't doing anything. My own personal definition of a career was so small at that time, mm-hmm. that anything could have filled that. And so I allowed the band to fill that. And then as the band grew, it just became my bigger career, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. So it wasn't like I made this bold move to, like, drop everything and try to be in this band. It was like my effort of being in this band was so small, but my life was so small that, sure, it didn't matter. Mm-hmm. Suddenly I looked and like, okay, now I'm on MTV and, well, you know, we're touring around the world.
World.
Pretty cool.
I mean, the first time I saw AFI a few times before you got really big MTV. I saw you guys on Main Stage Warped all wearing white. Okay. I remember thinking that was sweet at Randall's Island. And my senior year in college, because I'm a tad younger than you, but a senior citizen compared to the staff at Adobe,
fourth grade.
Yeah, well, Tales of a Fifth Grade something. I saw it was you guys headlining Blood Brothers Direct Support and the Explosion opening, and I saw that in Michigan. That was just as Sing the Sorrow was about to get really big, which I think right now is platinum.
It is platinum.
That's amazing.
It finally went platinum.
But it did it. So did Weezer's Pinkerton just went platinum recently.
Yeah, I saw that.
And it's 20 years old.
That seems weird to me.
It's iconic, but it didn't do well. I remember when it came out, I was really into it, but Rolling Stone panned it. It just didn't sell well at all. They had no songs on radio. Radio just didn't play El Scorcho or The Good Life, and it caused him to be like a complete recluse and like halt his life, and it influenced every single band on Warped Tour now. It's pretty wild. Yeah. But back to you. So I guess Sing the Sorrow was when, I mean, I think Art of Drowning is what introduced me, Scott Waldman, to you, but... And a Total Immortal.
Okay.
So
like 99,000.
Yeah, when I was a senior in high school. And, you know, here you are right now in Waldman's Words. So, like, if you could tell a 1999 version of Hunter that you'd be on this show, like, this is
pretty blow my own mind.
It's insane.
I mean, if I could tell myself, if I could tell my, I guess, what, 24-year-old self anything about the future, it would blow my mind.
Blow your mind.
That's, I mean, if you could tell me now, my 40-year-old version, anything about the future.
About your current future's past?
Or any, no, about the future's future.
I know something that's going to happen in the future for you. You're going to be playing some shows outside the U.S. with Deftones.
That's true.
So I know a little bit.
How do those shows go?
You know what? Some better than others. Okay. One of them... You know, you tripped and fell.
Oh, great.
But
you're trying to jinx me.
But the other one, you managed to float in the air for 5 minutes straight.
That's weird.
I know.
Is that technology available in 2017?
You're a human hoverboard.
Oh, okay.
And you're releasing a record next... And actually, it's going to be December when this airs. So you're releasing a record next month.
Let me just drop the actual info.
Okay, right, which is why you're on the show now. Yeah,
so AFI's new record... which is self-titled, but then parenthetically referred to as the Blood Album, will be released January 20th.
Via Concord.
2017.
Nice.
Now, January 20th, as some people, especially people in the United States listening, might know, that that's the day that the president is sworn in, traditionally.
I thought it was MLK Day.
And this year, it's kind of controversial. I mean, I guess... Many of them are controversial. This one might be particularly controversial for some. Some people maybe have a negative view about that.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people in my inner circle.
A lot of people, myself included. And so I'd like to think that our album release could be like one positive thing that is on that day.
I mean, you're definitely the most positive thing of my inauguration day, without question. I'm excited about it. And... It's been a little bit since Burial, so I think that your fans are very excited about it.
Fans are excited about it. We're excited about it. My parents guitar are student. Excited about it.
Well, your parents should be. I mean, if I were your parents, I'd be excited about it. And Jake, my guitar student, is very excited about it too. So there you go.
Well, good for Jake.
Jake is sweet. So anyway, we're going to take a short break. We always do this. Our best banner will never be recorded. I hummed a melody, like Unchained Melody by the Righteous Brothers, and Hunter just went ballistic. So talk about this,
okay,
Hunter.
Okay. So do you remember exactly what you... It was just random.
Dun, 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 dun,
dun. That's not... Okay, it wasn't that perfect. But yeah, it just reminded me of
Hunter just called my voice perfect.
It was so perfect. It just reminded me of... one of the little melodies from Super Mario Brothers 3.
Second best video game of all time.
That gets stuck in my head from time to time, including this morning as I pulled onto the street here to park.
How do you like them apples?
But why? Like, why does that come out? Like, dun dun dun. Dun. Yeah.
Those MIDI melodies from Nintendo games are so. Dun 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 dun. See, we're harmonizing in the octave.
What is what's that like?
It's Ganon.
Is it?
That's Zelda. That's a Zelda
melody. Yeah. Like, I know all these songs. Sometimes some of the songs from Rygar get stuck in my head.
Rygar, oh my god. The big dude.
Yeah.
Metroid. I love Kid Icarus. That game is severely underrated. Nintendo games, I'm sorry, kids of 2016. They're so much better than these games that have incredible graphics. You get some kind of validation when you blow on the disc and it works.
I think whatever you grew up with, you're going to sort of relate to, and it's going to be your, you know, little reference point. But I think that, you know, with the earlier video games that didn't have as much detail and much story going on, it really required you to put your own imagination into it. And so, I don't know. There's something to be said about that.
I mean, there is no life I know to compare with pure imagination.
Oh, there you go.
There
Bringing
I go.
It back around.
Bringing it back. So, now we're going to talk about labels. Not labeling people, but AFI has been on about 333 labels. So, I'd love to hear about that.
I don't like to use labels, but... yeah, I mean, that's the business side of this.
That's the crux of the show.
You know, when I joined the band, we had a contract with Nitro Records.
Dexter Holland, right?
Yeah.
Nice.
And then in 2002, we signed to DreamWorks.
Of Papa Roach fame.
And then, is that what they're known for? I think it's Nelly Furtado.
Nelly Furtado, Papa Roach. I remember Apex Theory. Okay. DreamWorks. Yeah.
And then... Let's see.
Did that kind of merge with Interscope eventually?
Yeah, DreamWorks, the music side of DreamWorks was sold to, I guess, to Universal and was kind of rolled into Geffen.
Mm-hmm.
And half the bands went to Interscope and half were under Geffen, but it was all sort of the same thing. And then eventually it all became just Interscope. And so then we finished out that contract. And
with my second favorite, your favorite AFI record, Crash Love. I love that album. Love it. And I wish that, you know, it did better than it did.
Well, you know.
Radio should have embraced the shit out of that. Oh, I said shit. See, before the show, you asked if we can use some expletives, and I just did.
Darn. Like,
dang it. Gosh, dang it.
So you'll be excited in 2019.
What?
When we...
The 10-year?
When we probably won't do a special 10-year thing for
it. What a freaking letdown.
Play all the songs from that.
In backwards order.
In reverse order. We play the songs in reverse as well.
And you were telling me last time I saw you about relearning a very difficult bass line on one of the later tracks.
To be honest, I'm 40 and...
I appreciate your honesty.
relearning any song is difficult. So we're playing the K-Rock's Almost Acoustic Christmas
mm-hmm.
in like less than 2 weeks. And I have to learn how to play these songs that are pretty regular songs that mm-hmm. we've played many times. Some of them we've probably played thousands of times.
Yep.
And I have to remember how to play them.
Muscle memory, dude.
And you'd think it was easy. And it's not. And it's not about like...
Do you look at tabs online for your songs?
I've done
that
before.
That'd be awesome.
I actually watched a YouTube video of a guy playing a song. Just like, what am I doing in that part?
Okay. Like an AFI tutorial.
No, he was just doing like a bass cover of a song.
That's awesome. You should comment. You should totally comment. Be like, dude, thank you.
I have done that before.
That's awesome. That would make my life if I was making those videos.
So, yes.
Yes.
Yes, whatever we were just talking about.
We were talking about labels, 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 and once a guitar tab. I love it when people ask a question like, so how old were you when this happened? And people go, maybe.
Maybe. How old? Maybe.
63.8.
You know what? What drives me crazy?
What?
But I also do it all the time.
Is this like a sign? Well, you know what drives me crazy?
Yeah, basically. When someone asks a question and the response is yes and no.
Oh, God. That's not really... That's a cop-out.
But it, usually it makes sense. It's just a
yes
weird answer.
Yes and no.
But one time I was sitting in a hotel lobby and there was an annoying... like older couple that were kind of harassing the concierge about...
That's a huge pet peeve.
And at first the concierge is like, you know, kind of humoring them and giving them some, telling them like, you know, go to this restaurant and do this thing. That's the job he is doing. And so it's fine. But they just kept going on and on. And I could sense that he was getting more and more annoyed. And eventually they were about to leave to go to one of these places and they sort of tried to make a date with him the next day, like, so we'll see you back here tomorrow then, you know, to basically to annoy you more.
Oh, boy.
And his response was yes and no with no explanation. And then they left. And
but
was,
you probably appreciated that response.
That was amazing because it's like he didn't really agree or disagree. He did both. So,
that's, I mean, you could tell a lot about a person in another digression. That's not a word, I don't think, mm-hmm. but... It is?
It is.
Sure, great. I've never used it before, so I'm digressioning.
Good job.
Thank you, sir. So, when people are rude to servers, when people are rude to cashiers, or I know in the service industry, it really, really grinds my gears. And I saw that there was a meme going around, I think this morning, of this person who went to a restaurant and they didn't leave a tip. They said, bills are just too expensive lately. And that was what they wrote down. It's just like, then don't go to a restaurant.
Yeah.
Anyway, so labels, labels, labels. So you shifted after Crash Love and you released Burials, I believe, on Republic.
On Republic, yes.
And was that like a one-off or?
Yeah.
And now you're on Concord for your January release.
Yes.
So you've been around. I hope that you're enjoying your experience with this one.
So far, it's been great. I mean, we haven't released the record yet, so...
But it seems like the promotion's been quite good. I see a lot of ads for it.
Working with everybody has been great so far. So, good. I have nothing but great things to say.
I believe they have Andrew McMahon on their label as well. In the Wilderness.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, they have such an extensive catalog. They sort of represent a lot of different, like, smaller labels and imprints and mm-hmm. stuff. And
Fearless
so
is on Concord.
It's insane how much stuff they have. So...
It's good for you.
It's great for us, I guess.
No, it is, because they have more of a base and they have more clout.
Yeah.
As opposed to the label that released AFI's first few records.
True.
So, you know, I'm happy.
Okay. And well, as long as you're happy, then
I mean,
then
and
the
my
world
happiness
is happy.
Correlates with your livelihood. So you touched on this about 22 minutes ago, but writing. Talk about that. You've written and produced with Tegan and Sarah and Zach James. So I'd love to hear about this.
Okay. Well, let's see. With Tegan and Sarah, Tegan and I used to write songs together all the time, like through email. Mm-hmm. And
the email service.
Yes, basically. I mean, it was, you know, I don't know. I had only mostly written songs with people in person prior to that. And I don't know. She would send me like...
From Canada to you? Or
yeah.
What? Okay.
She would send me just sort of, you know, little song ideas or like disembodied vocal tracks. And I would send her instrumentals and just back and forth. We kind of wrote a bunch of songs. And we were trying to sort of work that out as an actual project. And it never really came to light. But
was it because both your acts were busy at the time, you think?
I don't know. There's a bunch of different things. We were both really busy at the time. And then also, we were just eager to do something with the songs. I think we tried to sort of shop them around for other artists.
Publishing?
Yeah. And then when that didn't happen, it wasn't even when that didn't happen. It's just because both of us were so busy, suddenly a new Teen and Sarah record was on the horizon. And so Teen submitted some of those songs for the album. And, you know, I don't know the exact process of how they decide what songs they want to record, but three of those songs were included on their record.
Success.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool. And
you produced a full record, though, right?
No, I did. No production with them.
Oh, for some reason I did.
I played on a record.
Ah, that's the ticket.
Yeah, I played on half of a record. I played on Tegan's songs on The Con.
Okay.
And that
bass or anything else?
Just bass.
Okay.
So that was cool.
I think it's super cool. I mean, because people wouldn't assume that AFI and Tegan and Sarah would work well, but
we played a show together too.
Oh, how that! What was the crowd like for that one?
It was great. It was in British Columbia in Victoria.
Did they headline or did you headline?
We headlined. It was I don't remember when this was, but it was sort of a Christmas themed show.
Mm-hmm.
But there were only maybe
like acoustic Christmas.
Yeah, there were only like three bands mm-hmm. though, maybe. But yeah, it was a lot of fun.
BC is, in my opinion, because I've been all over North America, probably one of the most beautiful parts of North America. I don't know. Do you agree, sir?
I mean,
Vancouver is so gorgeous.
It is. I mean, there are some. Canada is gorgeous.
Yeah.
I mean,
so much land.
Yeah. So, and then you just said North America. So that's like, that's an entire continent.
It's a lot
there's
of
a
things.
Lot of really beautiful places that are very different from one another. And
a different, well, a PCH, the drive. I did this on my mini moon post wedding from around the Santa Barbara area. We cut to the one to San Francisco and went to Morro Bay, went to Pismo Beach and Big Sur. Okay. And it's so different. It was amazing. I digress. So it's funny. Lucky number 7, I wrote down Our Love for Crash Love, which we already spoke about.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go back. You actually are an author.
I am an author.
And an auteur.
I'm an author. yeah, I wrote a book called Success.
With a question mark?
With a question mark and exclamation point.
Ah.
And when I released that, but that was published 3 years ago.
Okay. Maybe we can get the Success people to sponsor this show.
And
with Roald Dahl.
I wrote a follow-up book that I've just been sitting on. It's completed.
Okay.
I just have to decide when I want to publish it.
Maybe on January 21st.
Well, that's the thing is, you know, sometimes I'm very busy creating things and sometimes I'm busy releasing things. And this period of time is all about releasing this AFI record. And so I don't want to have too much on my plate in mm-hmm. terms of that. So
I imagine 2017 is a big release year.
Yeah, so at some point next year, I will be, my book will come out.
What would you say, how does Success relate to its follow-up?
It's
Are they corollary?
Yes, it's a sequel.
Ah.
Okay, so Success is not, it's sort of a guide. And typically guides don't have a proper sequel, they might just have a follow-up. But this is a sequel.
Okay.
I'm taking one small aspect of Success and really just opening it up, cracking it open and jumping inside and really just exploring all areas of it.
Okay.
So.
Does it have a name or is it still untitled? Like the new AFI record?
I'll tell you the title.
Yeah.
The title is Overnight Success.
Oh, wow. I'm excited.
So that's normally where you'd put this, like, really dramatic music bed. Like
dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, dun.
So I was humming that. I unintentionally plagiarized Mario 3. And I know in New York, they say Mario, and some places they go Mario.
Yeah, I think New York is the only place they say Mario.
We mess things up, dude. I do that. I get shit for that. Oh, no, I said it again. Gosh, dang it.
You said shit twice, and I've said it once now.
Actually, twice. You said it earlier.
I did.
You did. Crud.
Shoot.
Gosh.
All right, what do we got?
Oh, wow. He's looking at his metaphoric watch. Like, time is money, and I just pounded my hairy arm. So do you have any stories that you wish to tell the kids listening about your work, producing, writing, touring, anything, before we go back into the advice section and close this out?
Stories? I get put on the spot about stories all the time.
Sorry.
And it's tough because I don't have any, like, go-to stories. And even if I did, I would have used them so many times that, like, what's the point telling that again?
Well, you know what? There's a different person listening to this, I guarantee, than your typical audience. But
true.
So you can tell a story you've told ad nauseum, or well, you can just say something.
Well, I don't even have a story that I've told ad nauseum, so.
Well,
I don't have any stories. I'm not a storyteller.
Well, despite being an author. But,
okay, fine. I'm a storyteller, but I just don't have anything.
It's a different kind of story.
Listen, I just want to write my story down and sell it to you.
I understand. And I have quite the expansive publishing contacts in the literary field. But, you know, I guess my story with Hunter is we went on a little coffee excursion at Intelligentsia, and we spoke about the Red Hot Chili Peppers at length. So
we did.
That was a story for me, and that's where the story ends.
All right.
It was a great story. I learned a lot. Well, can you pretend right now it's 1996?
Okay.
So 20 years ago. Okay. Tell a young band, you could tell a young Scott, you know, I'm a few years younger than you. I'm growing up on Long Island, and I'm trying to make the band thing work. What advice would you give for young Scott who plays guitar and bass, not drums or clarinet?
Okay. Well, let's see. Okay, do you have a band, or are you just playing?
I just started a band called We Are Groove Animals, okay. And I play guitar and sing backups.
Okay, so you have a band.
Yes.
And obviously you've worked out certain things, like where to rehearse. And
mm-hmm. Drummer's house.
Okay, do you have any shows booked?
Yes. Okay. We were playing our very first show ever at Ground Zero in Belmore.
Okay.
So, and this is pre-Ground Zero in Manhattan.
Okay, so you have your repertoire worked out. You
I just nodded.
And this is your first show?
First show ever.
First show. So it's going to be bad no matter what, so don't even worry about it.
Okay.
You know.
That's difficult for a Long Island Jewish kid to do, is not worry.
Don't put too much pressure on yourself, because it's like one show is just a drop in the bucket of what you're going to end up doing if you stick with it. So, mm-hmm. So you know, don't be too hard on yourself. But the main thing is you want to try to begin connecting with an audience. And that, you know, that it takes place on the stage, but it also takes place off the stage, you know, like
in AOL chat rooms.
Well, like talking to the people that come to see you play. Maybe they came to see other bands, and so, but they see you there. So, you know, after you play your set, hang out at the merch table. Hopefully you have some, you know, at least some stickers, if nothing else, to sell or to give away.
Oh, yes.
You know, and then just talk to people. And I think that as a smaller band starting out, it's really important to try to, like, you know, invest in the scene and in the community, because
I would blow up as soon as I leave.
Yeah. Because, you know, that's you know, you want people to come to see you play, and I don't know,
to be emotionally invested in it.
Yeah. So that's your first advice.
Okay.
And then
post first show advice.
Post first show is you want to have a second show and a third show and just keep booking stuff. And I think if you're starting out in the 90s,
yes,
which is all I know about, it's important to just, you know, to begin with, just to play as much as you can, because not only will more people find out about you and be able to, you know, check you out, but also you'll get better at playing and you'll get better at playing shows.
And you're better at commanding a crowd.
Yeah. And so it's just experience, and don't worry about getting paid or, you know, what the show is. I mean,
well, I don't have any expenses or debt. I live with my mom and dad, so.
Yeah. So, I mean, I played hundreds of shows around the Northern California area when I was in high school and even after that, I don't think I got paid for any of them.
Right.
You know, it would just be like an opportunity. I had bands where we would look for an open mic night and we would just play that, knowing knowing that we were going to get kicked out after the first song.
Maybe because you were too heavy? Or?
Yeah, just because we were heavy and screaming, and that's not the whole point of that open mic night, mm-hmm. you know? And we would we
But
loved
you'd make
it.
An impact.
Yeah, we would play parties, you know, out in the mud on the top of a mountain where there's just a generator and like a work light mm-hmm. that's not even sort of pointed like at us. It's just
there.
Yeah. You know, pretty much any opportunity to play, we would play. And that just sets you up so that when you do play these first shows at a real club and, you know, you're not like bummed that the backstage is shitty.
Right.
Said it again.
Oh my God. See?
Yeah.
I think that's number three yeah. on the number two. Ah. Oh, I know. Dude, that was a swing and a miss.
Yeah. You're just grateful that you have a backstage, you know, or I don't know. It just makes you appreciate it more, I think. But plus you're playing more often and you're honing your craft and you're really solidifying what you're doing. And then at some point you're ready to take the show on the road. And since it's 1996, there's a great resource called Book Your Own Fucking Life.
What?
Which is a publication that...
is that like Maximum Rock and Roll?
Yeah.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, it's... who put that... Was it them? I don't know. But basically it was a printed... It was like a magazine that came out like every year or something. It was mm-hmm. basically a printed resource of venues and promoters and labels.
Contacts.
And zines and you would call them because it's 1996.
Yep.
And you call and try to get shows and try to book a tour.
You're your own booking agent.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, we're going to close this out in a few. Again, thank you so very much, Hunter, for coming out. If you want to list your socials for people to attack you in a very, very polite fashion, please do so.
Attack me? How about just say hello?
Just say hello.
Okay, so my socials. I can be
because found, it's not 1996.
I can be found on most social media as Tranquil Mammoth, and that includes Instagram.
Twitter.
And Twitter. And Facebook.com/Tranquil Mammoth.
Damn right.
And what else is there? Tumblr.
Do you have a Tumblr?
I do.
That's crazy.
I haven't used it in a while, but...
Yeah, I felt like I was too old for it, but you just showed me the light. I should write some blogs there.
And what, Snapchat?
Oh, yeah. No, we're Snapchat friends. I don't do it that often. I told Mirror Eyes if they signed a record deal, I'd sign up for Snapchat.
All right. Yeah. So there you are.
There I am. And I guess... We've got Andy Hill from the hardcore band that kind of emulates early 80s punk like Black Flag and the Germs. He's going to be on the show discussing his improv and his playing. And we also have Kevin from Mirror Eyes. And by the time that airs, I think I'm going to be in Asia on my honeymoon. So I'm stoked on that.
I can't wait.
I know. I'm so Kelly's so happy you're joining us. So before we close out, is there any record that came out in 2016 that you're really a big fan of? Or 1996?
You should have told me about this earlier so I could use my brain and think about it.
No, impulse. Or you could just say something else.
Well, okay. The Savages record.
Okay.
I love that one. That came out in early 2016.
Mm-hmm.
The David Bowie, his last record, amazing.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I think it debuted at number one.
Did it?
Yeah.
Good for him.
Good for him. Mazel tov.
There you go. There's two records.
That's fine. I now I'm seeing Hunter Cower, so I think this is the time to vacate. Thank you so much, Dan. Thank you, Idobi. Tune in next week and every week, Tuesday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern Time.